how you ended up in Japan for so long.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, so anyway,
anyway, I first came in contact with them in Nepal, in Kathmandu, actually. I was practicing Hatha Yoga very intensely in an ashram in Kathmandu. And somebody said nearby, somebody is talking about Zen in the evenings. And I thought Zen, I've heard a bit, I've read a bit, but I never practiced it yet. And one evening I went, and that evening, that very first talk about Zen changed my life. Started changing my life in a very positive way. And then I went almost every evening after the yoga, and the evening when it finished, I would go to his place. And he used to work in a hotel. He was a training manager of the Sheraton or somewhere, that's good. And in the evenings, he would put some gown on top and he would talk about Zen. We would do Zazen around the teapot, around the kettle, actually. He would put on those electric wires, put the kettle on, and we'd sit Zazen until the top started making noise. And it took about an hour. It was a very weak warmer, hot heater. But anyway, it was wonderful. We did sesshins, and we did weekend sesshins, and then we did 1 week, and that sesshin was the most intense I ever experienced. Because it was in a large room, but we never, in the whole week, we never left the room. And each sitting was an hour and a half. And then a quick in, very quick, very fast, with a little drum, rhythm, and going about 5 or 10 minutes, and sit another hour and a half, like that. And the first day we slept 7 hours, then 6, 5, 3, and then the last 24 hours were in one go, like, very hard. And we had very little, about once or twice a day, but very simple, just instant ramen. So there were not even fantasies about what we were going to eat or anything. Same. Very hard. So then I left, and I was a photographer, so I kept taking photographs and writing about places, which was my job. And eventually I got back to Chile. I was teaching yoga because I had learned. I was about 6 months in a very intensive course, so after that I was entitled to teach Hatha Yoga. And I was sent to do photographs several places, and one of them was a feature about Zen in Japan. And that was it. I got to Japan for a sesshin, and I was going to stay 1 week, a little more, write and leave. I never thought. They always said that Zen was dead in Japan. I've heard there was only dead rituals. There was not real practice anymore. But that place was pretty alive, I must say. No many rituals, just Zen. And I couldn't leave. I felt so well. Then it was a real intense change in my life. And I couldn't leave. And then 10 years passed. I sent the photographs by mail then. And I stayed.
Where was that?
In the city called Obama. It was very unknown in those days.
Fukui.
Obama.
Fukuike. Very famous.
Now. Before it was absolutely yeah. No. And life in the monastery was very intense, were very scheduled and in silence, because even though I spent 10 years in Japan, I didn't even learn how to speak Japanese, because there were very few chances of practicing Japanese and there was no studying or nothing. Studying was almost a bad word there. Just Zazen, and one doing was the motto. Compenetrating every step, every breathing, everything you're doing, just be that. No, don't think if it's I'm doing it well or bad, just do it. That was the practice. And when you focus like that, it's amazing how the years disappear. 10 years have passed. And it was wonderful. I was amazed that it was so monotonous. Nevertheless, I was so happy. Living so really, I was smiling for about 3 years. Then I got used to it. I didn't smile anymore so much. like that. And during the 10 years, I never, ever thought about leaving. Sometimes, of course, I would be maybe bored or whatever, but I never thought about leaving. until 10 years have gone, and then I felt that I should go to Chile and share this practice, because the benefit of it is so deep and positive that probably many people would benefit by doing it. So off I went. I told the monastery, I said, go. And I went to Chile, and at that very moment, Ingrid and I met. And so from then, we continued very close together in the practice. Settled the place north, more or less Chile is very long, and Santiago is in the middle, north of Santiago, about 600 kilometers, close to the desert. It's desert up there. And that was running very well, more or less in the schedule of the monastery I'd been. But of course, a bit of a Latin version, it wasn't so strict. But anyway, lots of Zazen, about 2 hours in the day, and three in the evening were dedicated to Zazen every single day. And Cha-okyo, chanting. Like that. Of course, things are in the Japanese custom, we couldn't do like takuhatsu in Chile. We never even attempted to do that. It's a wonderful practice in the Zen monasteries to go out begging in the armors around. Actually, I stayed there, and then at some point I was entitled to join the monks doing takuhatsu. And that time I thought, this is my life. I will become a Zen monk, and this is it. I didn't doubt anymore. And soon I started asking if I could be ordained, and eventually I was. They wouldn't ordain so quickly there. You have to wait for about a year to make sure, not to waste energy or the risk of changing one's mind afterwards. But that was it. No studying, no reading, no nothing. That decade I knew nothing about the world, because if newspapers came, we were all in Japanese, that I didn't know. Sometimes when the work was wiping windows with newspapers, the Japanese people would enjoy them. But I couldn't do that. Anyway. And it was like that, and sitting in Zazen, centering the breath and letting the mind go, which is the base of Zazen. And then gradually, like the body drops and the mind as well. Because the body drops, because I arrived in spring, then the summer came, and then winter was coming, and they said there was a lot of snow in winter. And I had no clothes or anything, and the winter came, and I was in flip-flops in the snow, and of course no gloves, shaving the head. No heating whatsoever. The window's always a little bit open. So it was cold, but I didn't mind. I was very surprised about that. How, in a way, in a very practical and direct way, except that the body drops. All that information, oh, I'm cold, it didn't matter. Of course, you get sort of frostbites and things, but then the spring comes and everything's healed again. Details like the feet would get cold in November and wouldn't warm up until March. Always cold feet. But you get used to that sort of thing. You know you're not the body, just information of the feet. And very healthy anyway. Never, very few people got any sickness of any sort. Every day eating rice for breakfast, again mild at lunch, and the leftovers at 5 p.m. And the normal food until the morning, next morning. And so the practice went to Chile, and at the beginning we didn't know how to tackle it because it was so unheard of. There was a little bit of Zazen, but a little group of 10, 15 people at the most, followers of the Shimaru that came. A Chilean that lived with the Shimaru in France came, and he was sharing that experience with a little group of people. So we didn't know how to do it, so we started more relaxed in a place, and then it became. Then many people started coming, so we made it more strict to regulate the amount of people, because it wasn't a very big place. And then it got quite similar to the Japanese schedule. Another interesting fact was that we used to go and teach Zazen in the prison, to the prisoners. We did that for the 7 years. We used to go 3 times a week to do Zazen with the men, one with the women another time, and with the underage. There's a prison for 16 and 17-year-old that we couldn't mix, so we had to go to one to the other. And that was a wonderful experience as well. Some people were very benefited from it. And there's something which I have read many times, but I never experienced directly, which is that often one reads that if one person meditates, the whole environment benefits all around, isn't it? One has read that a lot. And in prison, as this was unusual to practice meditation in prison, the local television got involved, interested, and they went and filmed. And they asked different people their opinions. And they asked the guard, the main guard, how do you call him, the chief in the prison, the main warden, about it. And he said that it was noticeable how since meditation was being done in the prison, how the relationship between the prisoners and the guards had improved. I was very impressed because I thought the percentage of people who did meditation was very small because it was very optional. Those who wanted would come. But many people tried 1-2 times, but as it hurts in the knees and the back, they would stop. But some persevered. But anyway, we did meditation anyway, and the whole compound was benefited in a way. That was like a proof of something that I've read a lot, and I didn't know. It's very difficult to measure, qualify that such a subtle influence.
Something like air contagious.
Yeah. Like a little, like a positive radioactivity goes through the walls. And after that, after some years that we settled in that place, because destiny got us there, but it wasn't a village that was very noisy. There were all swimming pools and clubs that played music very loud day and night. And karaoke next door. Zazen and karaoke, very annoying, especially for people doing it for the first time. So we decided to move there. You know? And we moved close to Santiago now, where we have a place near the ocean. And that's very quiet. It's a place that there's no electricity there. We have to get our energy from solar panels. So everybody's taking care of the energy, so there are no loud radios or anything. Anyway, it's very underpopulated. So quiet. It's a lovely place for Zazen. So, of course, you're all very welcome to come and experience it. It's a very nice place. Now, well, we're not there, so it's closed, but soon we'll open again and it will remain open. It's open most of the time, unless when we travel. If you want to check it out, it's Zendo. Elzendo.cl. CL stands for Chile. It's in Spanish, but anyway, there's a gallery of photographs you can see, and it's when one knows about Zen, it's very easy to understand it in Spanish as well.
.com or
.cl? No, it's elzendo.cl. Elzendo Gmail is .cl. No, that.
¿Y dónde tiene L? ¿No tiene?
Tiene dot, punto, enciendo punto, CL. Es, sí,
The page.
The page,
yeah. The other one is the email, I'm sorry.
Okay. Can I ask a question? Or sure. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt the flow of your talk, but your experience is very extreme or intense compared to what most of us are doing. Occasionally we do sesshin or we do a few hours. But the question is, most people in life don't have the time to devote all of their so much time to meditation if they have a family and children and they're working and things like that. What is the carryover, or how do you make a connection with people who can't do so much? And maybe in your life, as when you've gone back to Chile, maybe you have to get a job and you have to do some other things like that. Was that a big shock for you, adjustment for you? And how do you, what kind of advice do you have for people who can't be so, you know, meditating hours and hours a day? One of the problems that was then sometimes is there are examples of people who have done it very, very much, but then there seems to be a gap between those people and normal people who have to have a working life.
Yes, sure. Because Zen is meditation, and Zazen is sitting meditation. So when one sits facing the wall, as we did, when you do Zazen, you're completely immersed into letting the mind go, dropping the body, developing that attitude of life, which, well, surely you've read and know about. You develop that intensely facing a wall, but then you get up and you go out to the daily life and you have more distractions, but then that is an inaction, which is more difficult, but far more valuable. So you can practice all the time, whatever you're doing, actually. It's the attitude you center, or you breathe, and you let go. And I find that it's very useful, or I use it a lot, that if... because Zen is something that... to remove suffering from life, isn't it? So if suffering appears in any way, be it physical or emotional, any sort of suffering, I take it like a warning, as if in a motor car the red light appears because there's no oil or something. I feel it like a warning, any sort of suffering, and when you see it like that and you center again and you develop that attitude without even needing to sit, you just get into it. Most times I find that the suffering goes. It's just a mental thing. You let go, and there it goes. Like that. So that can be applied in any moment. Of course, in a routine, especially if one has done the same type of life for a long time, when it's really have habits, and it's more difficult trying to apply the Zen attitude to a life which has been done in a way for too long. But it's always possible. And sitting allows us to develop that attitude more and more intensely. Because the way is infinite, isn't it? Because it's each instant, new again, new again, new again. You can't sort of lay back and say, oh, okay, I got the diploma. I don't bother anymore. No. It's every instant, now, always. Can't even mention it, though it's gone.
My experience of practice with entrance was rather different from yours. You went in head first and completely immersed yourself in, whereas I'm sort of slowly by slowly devoting more time to it. But either way, I think it's...
Because of the immersion, I did it slowly. I did a bit of immersion, but then I have a few years, a couple of years, slowly, doing a little bit. But then the final immersion in Japan helped me a lot. Mm-hmm. A lot.
Have you
got
something to say about that point?
I wanted to comment that my experience, though we are developing Zen in Chile together, is quite different than Jigsaw. Because I had heard about him in Chile. I had never met him. And I was practicing by my own. At the beginning, also beginning from yoga class, but in Chile. I had been recently a mother and I was quite stressed, and I began yoga class. And after yoga, the professor would make us sit for a while, but not as Zen, not as we sit. But then I was looking for a book who teaches how to sit. And I began practicing by my own at home for 10 years. All by my own. I didn't know anybody. I didn't know the name. I didn't know anything. Just sit. And I began 1 minute, 3 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes. And I stopped there, 20 minutes, for 10 years. My husband used to laugh a little about me, but it's okay. And a friend said, oh, she's getting a little crazy. Okay, but then I decided to come to Japan and learn more. And I had heard about Jigusan, and I decided to come to his the place where he was staying in Bukokuji. And I stopped by Nishijima's the dojo, to spend the night there. And we called by telephone with a friend we have, it's Luis Diaz, that was staying. He lived at Nishijima's dojo for 5 years. So I stopped there, and we called, and he was in India. So I stayed in Tokyo, and I met Nishijima Sensei when he arrived on the weekend. And I began getting to know him. And then before I came, I was in a group. That was the group I thought he was mentioning. I was in a group where Luis used to practice. And I didn't meet Luis. And they say, that is the cushion of the guy that is in Japan. So I sat there for 4 years. That was my first group experience. Then come to Japan, come to Japan, I tried to meet him and couldn't, so I stayed and I asked for my first vows to Nishijima Sensei, and he gave them to me the day before I left Japan. In the morning, I had my plane by 5 o'clock, and he did the ceremony at 9 or 9:30, something like that, in the dojo. So that's how I began. And one thing, I was very worried, because in Chile, in the group I was practicing, they would say, you cannot work all day and be a Zen practitioner. It's not possible to do both things. So whenever I arrived here, and Nishijima Sensei was working from Monday to Thursday, and we can practice with him Friday, Saturday, actually I came to this place, I think, with him once. Maybe not at the end, maybe it was earlier, I'm not sure. With Luis, I think we came once. And we were, I get to know him, and then I decided to be his disciple, to teach people that you can do both things. Mm-hmm. So I practice as much as I can. We have this place that he is all the time there, and I work in the week and go for the weekends, not even every weekend. I practice at home as Nishijima Sensei taught us in the morning and in the evening. And I teach anybody that wants to learn. I used to have a group for 7 years that we had to close another place. It was in the city. Because Nishijima Sensei used to say, if I can have in Santiago or something in the city for people that is working all day. So I had a place, but for 7 years, I think it was very good experience, but I had to close it. I had to sell the place. So now I'm beginning to create a small group also in Santiago, but then we go weekends and sessions and do them. So it's being built. It's not one way to do it, I think.
That's nice. The people in Chile have kind of two styles, two, you know, English way and the Jigsaw way are a little bit different in that sense, but it's nice. People have a kind of option, which is they can try both and so on.
But I like very much what he does. I appreciate that he devoted his life and he could do it. So I try to support, and we complement and work together.
That's right.
Because people need to learn so that they can carry it to their daily life. So we teach different places, different ways, but it's the same essence, as he said.
Yeah, Nishijima sensei came to the Zendo.
Yes, when the group invited him. Yes.
Yeah.
To Chile.
And he spoke and we did the Zen together. Yeah, he spent the night.
Yes.
About 24 hours he spoke. He arrived in the morning and left next day.
And it was far from Santiago, but he was very happy
to fly there.
To have that place also.
Yeah, it was very nice.
And we have visited him many times here in Tokyo also.
Yeah.
Together, we have come together.
At that time, Ingrid came and I was in India, I think that was the only 2 weeks that I wasn't there in 10 years. Yeah, it was unheard of to go out. And the teacher there, he planned like a pilgrimage in India, and he invited some people. We were about a group of about 30 people going to all the places the Buddha manifested. Lumbini and all the 15 days. Just then. But I stayed in the dojo before because as being a foreigner, I had to come and get a visa for India. And you had to do it personally. So I had to come to Tokyo all the way from Obama to Tokyo to get the visa. I had to spend 2 nights here or three. And I spent in the dojo in Nishijima sensei. How is it called? Ida. Ida Dojo.
Ida Ryudo Kokudo.
Yeah.
Dojo.
It was a wonderful place.
Wonderful.
Yeah, great.
I still miss the place.
Yeah. It was a great place.
And he came for 1 week to Chile and we had many activities. It was great. We have videos. And I also have a blog, but something in the internet. You know that. Sometimes it's not so clear. But with some little videos of Nishijima sensei in Spanish. Because I feel that there is very little information or good information in Spanish. You can find, but you have much more in English. So we translated the book, Dogen's, To Meet the Real Dragon, and there were 2,000 volumes in Chile, but 20,000. That for those places is very much. They published it in Colombia, and you could find it for many months in every airport. It was very important. I think many people has read the book. So what I feel I have to help Spanish speaking also people to get in contact with Dogen and the tradition.
And is it becoming well known? I mean Buddhism in general in South America and Chile. Are people becoming more interested in it, do you think, over the years?
What would you say?
A lot. At the time when I came to do the photographs, it became suddenly fashionable and trendy. And even though fashion and trend is not something, somehow it exposed it. Mm-hmm. And many people followed to begin with. And now maybe it's a little bit less, but more sincere and deeper. Anyway, the Nishijima sensei dojo and the monastery where I was, there was a constant relationship there. People would go from one to the other and one to the other, constantly. So when I came for the visa, I thought I was very glad to be able to see the place and meet him. So I did then. And then together we came eventually. After I left in 1999, I came to Japan. I've been about 4 or 5 times, I think.
Who was your teacher in Bukokuji?
His name?
Yes.
Daisetsu Tangen Roshi.
Daisetsu Tangen Roshi.
Yes.
Was he?
Sometimes he's called Harada Tangen also, sometimes.
Was he the gentleman who was in the war? Yes. I heard of story. Could you tell us that story?
He was in the Air Force.
In the Second World
War. And he has his
war,
date for the kamikaze flight and peace came. And that was very shocking for him because he was prepared. And they said, no.
he was a kamikaze pilot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was determined. It was hard to take it to begin with, but then he came to terms with it and he was prepared. And then, no. So it was very difficult for him that. Mm. Yeah. He suffered.
He suffered, really.
Yeah.
Because it changed.
Yeah, somehow. And then also, being in the Air Force, being in the army at those days, you know, you'd suffer very much because they were defeated. That sort of feeling. And the war ended. It was very hard for him, I think. He didn't talk too much about that, but in all the 10 years I got something. Especially that I needed to get it translated. I couldn't understand it directly anyway. But I got the feeling a bit. And it was after that he started the Zen. He wanted to come into terms with life again. And he followed the Zen somewhere, not far from Tokyo, I think he started. And then he was sent to his master, who is Dayun Sogaku. Dayun Sogaku. He was... it's a sort of celebrity in the Buddhist context, like a very good master. He was very, very strict indeed. His sessions were extremely hard. Sitting all the time, no lying down, things like that. Very hard. But he survived. He almost died actually at some point, but he survived. He got the Zen disease. Something very enigmatic, the Zen disease, but he got it, and he almost died. He was sent to the mountains to heal with some monk, very knowledgeable, and he said he was healed with genmai and tabashi. Genmai and tabashi, that's what he did for some period of time, and he got better.
Genmai is rice.
Brown rice and tabashi. So we used to do tabashi every morning. We used to do taiso. It was running first. The schedule was around 4 in the morning was sazen, and then 40 minutes each time. Then there was jogging for about 2 kilometers, 20 minutes. However, 2 kilometers was the maximum you could do in that 20 minutes. And then taiso. Mm-hmm. Exercises, and after taiso you do shizo and tabashi.
What exactly is tabashi?
Scrubbing with a very hard, very typical Japanese brush.
Oh, oh right, yeah.
Scrub. It's used in kitchens sometimes to scrub the pots. I see. Every now and then I see it in the shops hanging, and I remember. I've got mine in Chile, but I never do it. It was a nice feeling, yeah? Especially in winter, it would sort of warm you up a little bit, a couple of degrees. Because Obama is known for the amount of snow in winter.
It
snows a lot. It snows, snows. Sometimes, and the valley next door got the record of the place that most snow had fallen in a single night. Sometimes it was huge snowflakes. I've never seen that anywhere else. Sometimes it was also all kinds of different snows, but sometimes it was these huge flakes that gathered very quickly. So in winter, when that happened, we would open the path for the graveyard, and then zazen for the whole time. Cold, because the windows were open at the top all the time. I remember the snowflakes occasionally falling on the shaved head. Keep you awake.
So next session, the middle of winter, no heat, 10 hours a day of cleaning.
Yes.
How about that?
That sounds good to me. And windows open all night. We'd have to call the ambulance, I'm sure.
Yeah, have the ambulance ready here.
You cut that, it's the only thing you're allowed to wear.
How do you feel you changed after 10 years of sitting with her?
It made life so much better. So enjoyable all the time. Sort of waking up every day, another day like that. Before it was like that. Very rarely. And now sort of appreciating every instant. And I don't know how you can share that, but I think it's just I got to that through the Zen, so I thought some people probably can benefit from that, and several people in Chile have benefited a lot from Chile.
We do.
A lot.
Including me.
And Kyosaku, there was a lot of Kyosaku going on.
Oh, yeah.
This is in constantly. If you move a bit, whack! So hard. Usually you get a black shoulder after sushi. I think I ruined mine a bit, it's always creaking. The right shoulder, the left shoulder has a kesa, only on the right.
So that's something that people discuss sometimes, whether to use the kyosaku or not. And I meet people who say they think it's very good, you know, and I meet other people who think it's a bit of a disturbance or a bit...
In Chile, it's 100% optional. You have to request it.
That's a nice goal.
In Japan, you could request it as well, but it was so hard that you would really think it many times. But Chile is mild. Nobody gets black shoulders.
No. And people have to
request.
Yeah, when he stands up with their kesaku, you hear and you can request or not.
And we do both sides, because nobody wears a kesa.
So it's more of a kind of a medicinal, or just kind of wake you up?
Yeah, it does wake you up.
Relieve your stress? Or
yeah. I think it's like it must be some sort of point here for something in the brain that really brings you here now, and sometimes the mind is boggled with something that doesn't leave it, clears, at least for an instant. Yeah, it helps.
I think the person hitting this kyosaku, I guess they have to know what they're doing. I mean, they have to have some experience. That's my opinion.
Yeah, they must have. Yeah, the feeling must be pure.
Yeah.
Not sort of revenge. I think there were some sort of revenge for Kyosaku going on. Sometimes the Kyosaku broke.
Oh.
About once a year, it would splinters everywhere. In Chile, never. We never broke it in case I could go.
So the person who is strict is also a pretty tensive thing to be so not just being received the strictness, but the monks who would do that, they need to have the discipline and to do the act, sometimes even they emotionally have a struggle to that. That's what I heard or read someplace. Even to that side.
Yeah, so it's two people involved. The person hitting and the person being hit. So you want the guy doing it to be...
It's very important.
Discipline is something we really need to be up to.
Very important, the attitude. Yes. But it's, as I was saying earlier, I was asking... when you ask the question that I repeat a bit, because for me it has been so important that to take any suffering, be it becoming angry or even hungry or if you hurt yourself physically, take it as a alert. And if you settle again as if you were in the cushion, letting it go, you realize that it passes. Especially anger, or depression, that sort of emotion that made life so dark, if one takes them seriously and identifies with them. And actually there's nothing in the mind with which one should or can really identify. So if one has that attitude all the time, then it flows. The mind is like a river. And if you try to hold it, of course, burst. But if you let it go, it flows. Become depressed, flow. You know, it's not you. It's just a big mystery. So let it go. I find that very valuable. But there are alerts, like if you get angry, somebody pushes you and you are first, maybe at the beginning it would take some time, and then you realize, why am I angry? If nothing happened. And then sometimes you persevere acting like that. The realization of the reality of it, or letting it go, every time the time between when it happens and when you succeed, it's shorter. Mm-hmm. And sometimes even automatic. Sometimes things happen that traditionally would bother you a lot, but now they happen and you don't even notice them. They say, oh, this happened and I wasn't angry or anything, I didn't react, but gone. And I find that successful.
Can I ask how the practice with prison, that you went to prison and said, how did that happen?
I haven't a feeling that people in prison, they have time. They have nothing to worry in the sense of bills coming or what I'm going to eat, about food, their clothes, and not the usual worries that people, with which people get distracted normally. So they're always thinking, oh, what I'm going to do, what I'm going to eat, all of that. Prisoners don't have that. So I went to the prison and told the guard that I knew a way how to eliminate suffering from life, and I wanted to share it with the prisoners. And he said, what? And he believed me. I said, well, we'll try with the guards first. So we did an intensive with the guards for 2 months, almost every day. And then I think they approved, and and they benefited. They were very happy, the guards had practiced. They were easier in a way, because they used to receive orders. So you just sit, and there was shaking, but they would move. Doesn't move for a period of time. They would move. The prisoners were not so disciplined. But anyway, some of them, yes. No. The underage were very difficult. But they were so nice and funny. With them, I would practice more yoga, actually. They would get into that more, especially when there are lots of them. Sometimes there were about 20 at the time. Sometimes there were about 4 or 5. When there were less, it was easier. But when there were lots, we would do just very intense yoga, very very fast, and tire them. And they'd like the relaxation, lying on the back, and they would relax them, breathe, many full breathing, and check them that they're breathing well. And they'd like that. And then start relaxing all the parts of the body. And then I would guide them into sort of a Zazen attitude, but lying on the back and already relaxed. And that was very successful with them. They enjoy that very much.
Would the guards sit with the prisoners? Or would the prisoners be sitting and there'd sort of be guards with guns walking around?
Sometimes. At the beginning, so especially. And then they knew me after 7 years, a long time. After I walked in and out of the prison, like my home. At the beginning they were checking and they would touch the zafus to see what. Mm-hmm. And we took zafus to the prison, but then that wouldn't last because there were checkups and they would tear them open to see if they had something in them. Right. So we got tired of taking zafus. They had to sit on their shoes or something.
But they began building those tools.
Yes.
they created.
Was that meditation studio?
Yeah, they created and
you know,
they would buy the
flaps and yes. They made them very nicely.
Yeah,
I would sell them.
And boxes
the
for incense.
So they had smink come from.
They would do boxes for incense also.
Mm. Yeah,
very beautiful boxes.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, they were happy. I get messages that they want me to go again, but as I keep traveling, you have to be there. And those 7 years, I was most of the time there, so I would never fail. I always go. And once I came to a sesshin in Japan, and then when I came back, they were curious. They knew I had been to Japan and said, "How's Japan? What happens there? What's the most extraordinary thing about Japan?" And I said, "The most extraordinary thing about Japan that nobody steals. Everybody leaves their homes open and nobody comes in." "Really?" I said, "That's where we're going." No. There's been a genetical cleanup because before, for many centuries, if somebody was stealing, they would chop the head off immediately. They said, "Maybe I won't go."
But it's about
the
rural area.
Yeah.
City area, though.
Yeah, no, everything open. We would go in Takahashi chanting. The houses were all open. You could see the pearls there. You could see everything. And sometimes nobody would come. You chant. No, come on, you continue.
Then you practice Hatha Yoga in prison. First you...
Yeah, we usually did some Hatha Yoga.
Posture.
Yeah.
Or theme.
Like we would spend about an hour and a half, and it would about 45 minutes of Hatha Yoga, and then talking, because there was always something new, and then Zazen, about 40 minutes of Zazen. Sometimes they were all new, and then Zazen would be shorter, or with a break. But even then, there was a lady guard. She was extraordinary. She was very interested in this, that this was happening in prison, because I was completely unofficial. My activity didn't appear in any paper. So they keep changing the guards from one prison to another. They move them all the time. And she arrived there, and this is a nice case. Yeah, because she'd known a prisoner before in Santiago prison, in the main city. And he was a nuisance. He was always causing trouble. And when she interviewed, she has to see prisoner by prisoner, the main guard, always to check her or whatever. And she always loathed to see him because he was so aggressive and rude and everything. And then she came to La Serena, to the town where we were, which was a high security prison as well. Very old, sort of 19th century, like Count Monte Cristo. Now they've built a new one, but then it was rough. And well, she came there and she found the same guy that came to the meeting, and he was sweet like a lamb. And she said, "What have they done to you?" She asked him. "No," she said, "now I practice meditation." And where? She didn't know. And she said, "No, teacher comes and teaches." And she was very, she wanted to meet me because she was so surprised about that effect. And that's one of the cases. He was great. He organized everybody. He had he would check the list and everything. He got that if they went there, they would get sort of some sort of merits. You know, they got the merits to get early weekends out and things like that. And he would make sure that they were working. And then he did something, and he was sent away to even more higher security. He disappeared again to some other prison. I wonder what he did. There were lots of things going on in the prison. I wouldn't inquire ever what they did or anything. I would just go, teach Zen, do the yoga, and go. I wouldn't get involved in other things. Sometimes I would take this letter to... No, I cannot do that sort of thing.
I had a question about the link between Zen and yoga. It's fascinating that you've combined those two together, and I have a yoga practice as well. Do you find that one feeds into the other?
Yeah, because yoga actually was developed to be able to sit in the proper posture and the correct breathing. That's what yoga is actually. Mm-hmm. Even if you see it in the Ashtanga, whatever it's called, the yoga, first the precepts, then yoga, Hatha yoga, and then concentration, then meditation.
It's a part of
it. It's a step. So the eight-step yoga, the eight-step process, and then the top step is the dhyan. And Dian is the original name of Zen, isn't it? The Buddha Dian went to China, Chan, and went to Japan, Zen.
Oh, but the Indian man in this group, he's not here today, but said the top is Samadhi.
Samadhi, yeah. Dian, Samadhi.
Dian is
the
second stage.
Yeah, Zazen. And then would be Satori or Samadhi.
Samadhi.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess we'll finish up. Yeah, is that okay? But, thank you very, very much. It was a very wonderful talk.
No, thanks to you all. It's been great. I wish that you'd write to us, so then you would get information when there are sessions in Chile. Every month when there's a session, I send to all the contacts the information, so you would be reminded that it's a place waiting for you somewhere. In the furthest away corner of the world.
In the other side of the world.
Spanish.
All in Spanish.
It's in Spanish.
But many people speak it.
But the other day, I showed it to somebody, and he just selectioned it and translated from Google, and it was so good. I thought, I think I'd do the translation like that, because I didn't find anything to correct, actually. Before, Google Translate was very poor.
Mm-hmm. But just in using the Google Translate.
Yeah, yeah. It was amazing. So, having seen that, I think we'll have the English option.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody.